Good afternoon. My name is Susan Muirhead, and today I'll be reading part one of the News Gazette, dated for this date, Tuesday, August 25th, 2026. As always, let's begin with today's top stories. The first headline reads, University of Illinois. You gotta see it in person. Staff trying to acclimate Illini players to display. This article is written by Luke Taylor, who can be reached by email at LTAYLOR@newsgazette.com. This article is based out of Champaign. The new video board reigning over one end of Geese Memorial Stadium is almost too big to be believed. Associate Athletic Director Daryl Miles, Director of Fighting Illini Productions and Technology, said even other industry professionals are wowed by the screen when he sends them pictures. The most common word he hears in reaction to it is quote-unquote huge. But pictures do not do this board justice. The sheer scale of what it is in proximity to the field is amazing. Any Illini fan who has any type of fandom with us here needs to come down and take a look at it, Miles said during Monday's episode of News Gazette Radio. You gotta see it in person. Starting with next Thursday's season opener against UAB, college football's largest video board will show game replays, crowd shots, interactive content for fans, and whatever else the production team cooks up to provide unique entertainment. It's also a display of strategy. That video board can be distracting for good and bad reasons, and we're trying to make it bad reasons for our opponents when they come in, Miles said. His staff have been working with the Illini football players and coach Brett Belima to get the team used to what the display might be up to as they play. The anticipation has been building since January 13th, when Illini Athletics announced that South Dakota-based Daktronics would design, manufacture, and install at Geese Memorial Stadium, the largest main video display in college football, by a bundle. At 17,315 square feet, it dwarfs the sport's next largest board, which is Auburn's, at 10,690 square feet. The jitters are going. I probably feel kind of the same way as Coach B getting the team ready, Miles said. You kind of know what you got, but until you get it all the way out there and get it out there on the field, that's when you really get to see it in full force. Between now and opening night, there will be a lot of rehearsals and a lot of eyeballs on things, Miles said. With the size of this board and the canvas that's in it, there are a lot of new moving pieces for our department to learn. The audio system saw an upgrade too. Miles said the thumping bass will be noticeable right away, as will the improved syncing between audio and video from anywhere in the stadium. That's not all that's new this year. The stadium has an upgraded Wi-Fi system, upgraded lighting, and external display screens to show off Illini spirit from miles away. Miles, M-Y-L-E-S, said the new lighting will hit visitors in the face right away, with orange and blue highlighting impactful moments, particularly during night games. And there's one photograph, that accompanies this article. It's just, I think, a standard stock photo of the Geese Memorial Stadium, but from the opposite side of the field, end of the field, where you can see the large screen. The caption reads, "The largest video board in college football, which made its unofficial debut with the August 8th showing of Air Bud, will be ramped up for real next Thursday when Brett Belima's Illini kick off the season against UAB at Geese Memorial Stadium." That photo is taken by Michael Smeltzer for the News Gazette. The next headline reads, a large photograph front and center of the paper. It's called Dogs Parked, a large photograph of a man standing outside Supercuts, a retail shopping center, and he's pointing to statues on the ground of dogs. The caption reads, St. Joseph-based artist Tim Somerville shows off his recent sculpture, Break Buddies, at Robeson Plaza in Champaign on Monday, Somerville created the artwork in honor of the late Kyle Robeson, who developed the plaza in 1968. The two dogs complement three others that were placed at Robeson Park in 2022. There'll be more on that in just a moment in Top of the Morning. That portion of the paper, we'll get to that in just a moment. This photo is taken by Rob Cates for the News Gazette. Next up, federal indictment. Emmons's trials may be moving to Springfield. Cases reassigned after judge recused. Trial dates challenged. This article is written by Jana Wiersema, who can be reached by email at jwiersema@newsgazette.com. This article is based out of Urbana. The federal case against State Representative Carol Ammons and Champaign County Clerk and Recorder Aaron Ammons has been reassigned to U.S. District Judge Colleen Lawless, who is based in Springfield, meaning that the high-profile trial could take place in the state capitol. Chief District Judge Colin Bruce recused himself from the court case on Friday. Bruce's text order did not specify a specific reason and simply cited 28 U.S. Code 455A. According to Cornell Law School's Legal Information Institute, the referenced section states any justice, judge, or magistrate judge of the United States shall disqualify himself in any proceeding in which his impartiality might reasonably be questioned. Bruce's order does not specify whether the reassignment of the case comes with a change of location. The federal grand jury indictment accuses Carol Ammons of misusing campaign funds and state grants to benefit herself and her family and conspiring with husband Aaron Ammons to impede the investigation of the alleged fraud. She is facing 8 counts of wire fraud, 1 count of providing a false statement to an FBI agent, and 1 count of conspiracy to obstruct justice. He is charged with 1 count of conspiracy to obstruct justice and 1 count of obstruction of justice. Both are pleading not guilty. Eric Long, who remains the U.S. magistrate judge in this case, is based at the federal courthouse in Urbana, but his purview in criminal cases is typically limited to matters such as arraignments, detention hearings, and accepting guilty pleas. He is currently set to have pretrial video conferences with both of the Ammonses on the morning of Election Day. Local attorney Steve Beckett, who is representing Aaron Ammons, filed a motion Monday to push back this date as well as the current November 17th trial date, which coincide with the last day to count provisional ballots cast on Election Day as well as vote-by-mail ballots. The dates for pretrial and trial directly conflict with defendant Aaron Ammons' responsibilities as an elected official serving the citizens of Champaign County, and also occur at a time when his ability to work with his counsel to prepare this case is not possible, Beckett wrote. The current dates should be vacated, and new pretrial and trial dates should be set after November 17, 2026. If the new judge on the case sounds familiar to Champaign-Urbana residents, and Illini fans in particular, it's because Lawless granted University of Illinois basketball star Terrence Shannon Jr.'s request for a preliminary injunction in January of 2024. The judge's decision reversed Shannon's suspension from the team and allowed him to continue playing amid a rape charge. Shannon was later found not guilty. Lawless presided over the injunction lawsuit in Springfield after Bruce recused himself from the case, citing the same federal code as he did in the Ammons' case. Long also recused himself. Beckett was part of Shannon's legal team in his request for reinstatement to the basketball team. In his capacity as Aaron Ammons' attorney, Beckett filed a motion on August 17th asking for review of Bruce's assignment to the current case, which he said should be changed in the interest of justice, quote-unquote. Since 2019, Aaron Ammons' current defense counsel has not had any federal court matters assigned to Judge Bruce, as Judge Bruce has recused himself in any such matters, Beckett wrote, adding that the assignment of Bruce to the case may have been an quote-unquote administrative error. In his notice of recusal, Bruce denied Beckett's motion as moot. As a quick note, the story contains original reporting by News Gazette staff. If you're not a subscriber, please consider becoming one, because local journalism is only possible with your support. A subscription to the News Gazette plays a vital role in making this reporting possible. Thank you for your support and helping us to continue to connect our community. The next headline reads, now, top of the morning. Something to get you going today, courtesy of Vice President Jim Rosso. Questions, comments, suggestions for this article, you can always reach out to the Vice President of News for the News Gazette, Jim Rosso. His email address is jrossow@newsgazette.com. Even before Monday's dedication at Robeson Plaza in Champaign, St. Joseph-based artist Tim Somerville was hearing about his latest dog sculptures. Kim Robeson sent me a picture of a 4-year-old boy sitting on the dog and petting his head, Somerville said. The spontaneous interaction is the ultimate compliment an artist can receive. 4 years after Kim, her brother Eric, and their mother Phyllis worked with Somerville on a 3-dog display in Robeson Park, a tribute to prominent developer Kyle Robeson, who died in 2021, the family has added to the pack. At the southwest corner of Madison Kirby Avenues, 2 friendly hounds, break buddies, quote-unquote, the title for the sculpture, were put in place last week and celebrated Monday. Somerville, 70, has artwork throughout East Central Illinois and does animals right. From a buffalo at Urbana's Meadowbrook Park to a fawn at Champaign Scott Park, each of the members of Break Buddies received 100 hours of his handcrafted attention, no computer technology necessary. The idea was to have some fun with it, create a space where people can sit and enjoy having dogs there, Eric Robeson said. It's fun working with Tim on these projects. And there's a nice photograph of Tim, and he's kind of squatted down between the dogs, and he's got his hands on the dog's head, and it's a photo of him having his photo taken. Proud of his sculptures, and they look very lifelike on a beautiful sunny day. That photo is, again, taken by Rob Cates for the News Gazette. Next up, history. Area history. In 1926, Ione Hotchkiss, a junior at the University of Illinois, was saved by 2 physicians and the pulmotor crew of the Urbana Fire Department. Hotchkiss had been overcome by gas while ironing in her basement at 305 West Oregon Street. Her aunt, Mrs. Frank Summers, discovered her unconscious niece when she came home and smelled gas. The pulmotor device, that's P-U-L-M-O-T-O-R, or pulmotor device, driven by pressurized oxygen tanks, resuscitates victims by automatically cycling between positive and negative pressure to force air into and out of the lungs. In 1976, because of administrative decisions that have eliminated his duties, Patrick Welsh, head of the Radio Television Department, has resigned effective last Friday. Jay Jensen, Journalism Department head, has also announced his resignation, effective in August. I'm assuming that's from the University of Illinois, though not stated. That was in 1976. There's more. A university evaluation recommended last fall the radio TV department be eliminated, but administrators decided instead to postpone final action on that proposal until the department's 120 students have completed their 2-year term. For the next 2 years, no new radio television students will be accepted. There's no need for the department head under the present setup, Welch said Monday. The dean of the College of Communications can handle day-to-day affairs. That was in 1976 and 1977. In 2011, the University of Illinois spent $170,500 on its search for a new Urbana chancellor, which culminated in the hiring of Phyllis Wise. Wise starts October 1st. About $154,000 of that spending was for an executive search company and its expenses, said spokesman Thomas Hardy. The U of I released a heavily edited 355 pages of search documents Thursday afternoon. The state had granted in a letter Wednesday a U of I request to block the News Gazette from getting some information about the search for a new chancellor. The next headline reads, one moment. Capital News, Illinois. Convicted former deputy dies in prison of cancer. This is from Capital News, Illinois. The article is written by Beth Hunsdorfer. And Capital News, you can reach out to them by email at news@capitalnewsillinois.com. The former Sangamon County Sheriff's deputy, convicted of shooting an unarmed woman in the face after she called for help, died Sunday morning, his attorney confirmed. Sean Grayson, 32, died after serving less than a year of his 20-year prison sentence, defense attorney Dan Foltz said. Grayson shot Sonia Massey, 36, while she was in her kitchen on July 6, 2024, after she called 911 to report a prowler outside her home. Grayson, G-R-A-Y-S-O-N, responded with another deputy whose body camera recorded the events leading up to the shooting. That video showed Grayson shooting the unarmed Massey. Sangamon County State's Attorney John Millhiser reviewed the video and the Illinois State Police investigation and charged Grayson with first-degree murder 11 days after Massey's death. Grayson's attorneys confirmed in court documents that doctors diagnosed Grayson with colon cancer in 2023, before Massey's shooting, but shared that the cancer had then spread to his liver and lungs. While in the county jail awaiting trial, records obtained by Capital Illinois News showed that Grayson was taken regularly to Springfield for medical treatment. At Grayson's trial, he appeared gaunt and thin, much thinner than the deputy who was 6'4" and weighed 225 pounds at the time of the shooting. Grayson was convicted of second-degree murder in October. In May, Grayson requested a compassionate release under the Joe Coleman Act. In his petition, Grayson claimed that Massey invited him into her home and then attacked him with a boiling pot of water. Sonia Massey's family opposed the release. The Illinois Prisoner Review Board denied his request in late July. Civil rights attorney Ben Crump, who represented the Massey family, released a statement on Grayson's death. Sonia Massey's death was unjustifiable, and she should be alive today. Sean Grayson's death in custody from cancer does not bring Sonia back, the statement said. We wish his family prayers of peace, as we do for all who grieve a loved one. Sonia's family knows the pain all too well and will grieve her loss the rest of their days. The Illinois Department of Corrections did not respond to an email regarding Grayson's death on Sunday. Grayson was in custody at the time of his death, but details about his detention were never released. Capital News Illinois is a nonprofit, nonpartisan news service that distributes state government coverage to hundreds of news outlets statewide. It is funded primarily by the Illinois Press Foundation and the Robert R. McCormick Foundation. The next headline reads, Champaign County Court. Juvenile facing weapons charges ordered, held pending trial. He and another suspect allegedly prompted a Illini alert on U of I campus. This article is again written by Jana Wiersema for the News Gazette. This article is based out of Champaign. You can reach Jana, by email at jwiersema@newsgazette.com. A juvenile has been arrested on weapons charges after reports of two armed people making threats in campus town over the weekend prompted an Illini alert. The juvenile appeared in court Monday and was charged with one count of unlawful possession of a firearm without a FOID card. University of Illinois police said officers were dispatched at 12:37 a.m. Sunday to the 700 block of 5th Street near Green Street. Upon arrival, a couple minutes later, they found a juvenile who fit the description of one of the suspects and attempted to speak with him. They said the juvenile fled, but was soon caught. State's attorney, Julia Reitz, said that officers then retraced the juvenile's steps and found a handgun they reportedly had seen him toss into an alley. The firearm was found to be a P-80 polymer handgun with a loaded magazine and flashlight attachment. The incident was also captured on surveillance cameras. Police said officers continued to search the immediate area but were unable to find the second suspect. Reitz said that the juvenile had previously been sentenced to the Department of Juvenile Justice in a 2025 stolen vehicle case and was on supervision at the time of this incident. At her request, Champaign County Judge Chad Beckett ordered that he be detained pending resolution of the new case. Reitz highlighted that the incident occurred on the first weekend of University of Illinois students returning to campus, that it was dangerous, and that the resulting Illini alert caused concern for parents of students who received it. The report prompted the issuance of an Illini alert at 12:45 a.m. that stated there was a reported subject armed with a firearm at Green and Fifth in Champaign and warned those who received it to avoid the area. Officers ultimately determined the second suspect was no longer in the area and issued a second all-clear message around 1:30 a.m. Police said the recovered weapon lacks a serial number, making it a ghost gun. In addition to continuing the search for the second suspect, police plan to investigate the source of the weapon and will seek to identify any individuals involved in its creation or transfer for potential criminal prosecution. No further details are being released due to the age of the suspects. Police said they are putting additional resources into security in the Green Street area, and they do not believe this incident poses an ongoing threat. Police said investigators and analysts from the department's real-time information center are reviewing security camera footage from the area, and they are seeking evidence or information from witnesses. Anyone with information is asked to contact them at 217-333-1216. Those wishing to remain anonymous can contact Champaign County Crime Stoppers at 217-373-8477 or 373tips.com or via the free P3 Tips mobile app. Information submitted to Crime Stoppers is completely anonymous, and Crime Stoppers pays cash rewards of $5,000 for tips leading to an arrest in a homicide case, $2,500 for tips leading to an arrest in a felony crime involving a firearm, and up to $1,000 for tips leading to the arrest of those responsible for any other crime. The next headline reads, also, again, from Capital News, Illinois, ex-Carpendale high aide allegedly exploited minor lured her into cult. This article is written by Molly Parker and Mariah Fletcher for Capital News, Illinois. You can reach Capital News at news@capitalnewsillinois.com. A Carbondale Community High School teacher's aide allegedly cultivated an online relationship with an underage girl, sending her money and gifts while repeatedly encouraging her to make sexually explicit videos of herself, according to a federal criminal complaint and an FBI affidavit. Austin Noob, 32, of Carbondale, who is also the former owner of Levels Nightclub, faces two counts of sexual exploitation of a child. He pleaded not guilty last week in federal court in Benton. Judge Rihanna Daly on Monday denied Noob's pretrial release. He will remain in custody while his case is pending. The case originated in Boston and quickly led to Noob's arrest after he admitted to the FBI that he had been talking to the girl who said she was 12 when they first met online, according to a sworn affidavit filed last week by FBI Special Agent Samuel J. Sukovich, who investigates violent crimes against children from the FBI's Marion office. Later, Noob allegedly recruited the girl into an online group whose members encouraged her to share videos of her harming herself. She was then added to an even more extreme group she describes as a cult that included members sharing videos of people committing suicide and other bizarre acts, the affidavit alleged. Assistant U.S. Attorney Casey Bloodworth asked the court to keep Noob in custody, saying the allegations against Noob suggest a deep-seated, heavily rooted sexual deviancy. While the government's charges involve one minor victim, Bloodworth said there may be additional victims identified as the investigation unfolds. Noob's attorney Said Noob did not have a prior record, noting he would use an ankle monitor and said his dad had offered to ensure he had no internet access. But Judge Daly sided with the government in keeping him in custody, saying that despite hearing numerous child pornography cases, "I've never seen anything like this," quote unquote. The girl was interviewed July 28th, and the FBI's Boston office referred the investigation to agents in Marion on August 6th. 6 days later, agents interviewed Noob at his home. Noob, who the girl knew as Frank online, was taken into custody 2 days later. One count stems from August 13th, 2025, an exchange in which Frank asked the girl whether she had any new material. After she said she did, he wrote, "I definitely want to see," laugh out loud. She then sent him a link to the video of herself masturbating, according to the affidavit. The second stems from an April 9th exchange in which Frank asked her to spoil me with any new things she has taken. "I love you," he wrote after receiving them. He then suggested he might visit her soon and the two could make our own videos, quote unquote. Carbondale Community High School Superintendent Daniel Boo said Noob was hired as an aide in August 2025 and resigned effective April 10th, one day after the text exchange underlying the second federal charge. The period documented in the affidavit largely overlaps with his employment at the high school. The girl told investigators that Noob sometimes solicited sexual content from her while he was bored at work. Boo said he was unaware of the allegations against Noob or his arrest last week until contacted by Capital News Illinois on Sunday. He said Noob submitted his 2 weeks' notice in a letter dated March 30th and told co-workers that he was leaving to pursue a different job. Booth stressed that no one from the FBI or any other federal authorities have contacted him and that he has no information to believe any Carbondale High School students are involved. But he encouraged anyone with information to reach out to the district or federal authorities. Illinois State Board of Education records show Noob was licensed as a substitute teacher in November 2023. In July 2025, he obtained a license to teach social science and history in grades 9 through 12. His licenses were registered in two regional offices of education spanning the southern Illinois counties of Alexander, Franklin, Massac, Union, Williamson, and more. In a statement to CNI, a spokesperson for the FBI Springfield Field Office described the case as an active investigation, and per Department of Justice policy, we are unable to comment on active investigations. The next headline reads, let's actually take a look at our weather forecast over the next few days. The weather's been beautiful the past couple days. Today, the high will be 80. Patchy fog in the morning, sunny. Southwest winds around 5 miles per hour. Wednesday, warmer. The high will be 85. The low is 62. Mostly sunny. A 40% chance of showers in the afternoon. Thursday, the high will be 83. The low is 63. Mostly sunny. Friday, the high again will be 83. The low is 62. Mostly sunny. And Saturday, again, the high will be 84. The low is 62. Partly cloudy. Beautiful weather, so get outside if you can. And some quick reminders about the News Gazette. The News Gazette is a daily newspaper operated by CIMG, the Central Illinois Multimedia Group. Post Office Box 677, Champaign, Illinois 61824-0677. Jim Rosso is the Vice President of News. Jeff D'Alessio is the editor, and Nico Dugan is the managing editor. I'm Susan Muirhead, and this has been part one of the News Gazette, dated for this date, Tuesday, August 25th, 2026. Thanks for listening. I'll be back to read part two of the newspaper with you shortly. It's going to be a beautiful week. Have a great week, but I'll be back soon. Thanks for listening, and have a wonderful day.